Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Michelle Berquist, your host today, and I am delighted to introduce our leading lady. Let me tell you a little bit about our leading lady and our topic today. Our topic is don't let roadblocks become stop signs. Persevere. So I am delighted to introduce our leading lady, who is not only a leading lady, but she is an award-winning leading lady with the Women of Influence Awards earlier this month, which we will talk about. But I'm delighted to introduce Denise Bevers, and she is the co-founder and COO of Kindred Bio. And just a little bit of information about Denise. You need to know that she is the COO and co-founder of a development stage biopharmaceutical company that's focused on saving and improving the lives of pets. So listen up, our listeners, because we know we have a lot of you out there that are pet lovers, and we have a lot of you that are women owners. So Denise, I want to say welcome to Women Lead Radio, and please say hello to all of our listeners today.
Oh, hello, listeners, and thank you so much for having me, Michelle.
I'm so excited to get you on board, and congratulations again as one of our Women of Influence Award winners. You were actually nominated and then won the Emerging Women-Owned Business Award, so congratulations on that, and very worthy for your accomplishments, well-deserved. So
we're
all giving you a round of applause.
We
were excited to see you win. And I'm dying to know, because Kindred Bio and what you do, you know, can you share just a brief overview of what is Kindred Bio and how do you focus in on really improving and saving the lives of pets? I'm intrigued.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Kindred Bio is a biopharmaceutical company, and we are solely dedicated to developing drugs, therapeutics for cats, dogs, and horses. So for pets, if you will. And you know, we, myself and the other co-founder, Dr. Richard Chin, we both grew up in human drug development. And we realized that there was a serious need to bring that level of care over to our beloved cats, dogs, and horses. So we're really taking advantage of the hundreds of billions of dollars that have been spent on the human side of R&D and bringing some of those drugs and targets over to our pets.
I love it. I mean, and seriously, I was reading about some of your, you know, raising fund process, because that is just crazy on what you went through. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I'm curious, I mean, what was the kind of whole inspiration idea for the product? Because you were one of the co-founders. There's two of you as co-founders, or
yes.
Are there more?
Two of us.
And what, Denise, was, I mean, where did you see the need? I'm really curious what the tipping point was that says this is what we need to do for pets.
Yeah, so we, again, Richard and I talked about this idea, gosh, it's probably about 13 years ago now. We were working at a company called Elan Pharmaceuticals here in San Diego on the human side of
drug
development.
Them. Yep.
Yes, and we said, you know, maybe it's time to think about developing drugs for pets. And the idea came up. We knew some colleagues who were working in the veterinary space, and we did a bunch of diligence about 13 years ago. And at the time, the cost of developing some of these drugs, particularly biologics, so the drugs that you hear about like Humira and Enbrel and Xolair, all of these cutting-edge biologics, are very expensive to manufacture. And at the time, over a decade ago, they would have really been cost prohibitive to the owners. And, you know, we joke, it's not a funny joke as a pet owner myself, but we say pet insurance is really American Express, Visa, and MasterCard at this point.
Because it totally is, right?
So, the cost of caring for our pets is quite high, and it's largely a cash pay business. So over the last decade, you know, the cost of developing these drugs and some of the innovation in manufacturing has come down such that we can now develop these drugs in a way that really makes sense for pet owners and the veterinarians. And Richard actually was doing some work, it was about 6 years ago, at a different company. We went our separate ways from Elan. We always stayed in touch. And he actually gave me a call and he said, you know, I'm doing some work in Africa and I've noticed that they're using drugs that were developed for livestock, for cattle, to treat people, you know, because they would would invest in R&D for livestock, but not so much in people. And he said, you know, maybe we should talk about flipping this on its ear, you know, and bring over the best of the best from human and bring it over to our pets. And you know, so from there, we just took it and ran with it and came up with a list of opportunities of drugs that were needed. We met with veterinarians and Kindred Bio was born.
And 13 years, did you say the development was 13 years to kind of cut from the idea to when you actually raised capital and started? Or what was the timeline again?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. So, yeah, so we worked together about 13 years ago at Elan, and we talked about the idea. We did some diligence, and then we both went on to do our own thing. I started another company, a consulting firm, working on the human side of drug development again, and Richard went on to do his own thing, and we always stayed in touch. And then about 5 years ago, we came together. We started Kindred Bio, came up with the idea, mapped out what we wanted to do as a business plan, and then started doing some fundraising and kind of took it from there.
Wow. And, you know, it's funny, Denise, because, I mean, a couple of opinions. You know, you're so right that the trend right now is, you know, somebody told me that even with pets, that someone has come out now with health insurance for animals.
Yes.
That they have, like, you know, different insurance packages. I mean, you know, they're part of the family, right, when you have a pet. And I kind of get it. I mean, this excites me. But I think for our listeners, one of the things I would love for you to share is, you know, I've gone to a couple of, like, Biocom, which is a very large industry association out here in San Diego, California.
Sure.
For our listeners, you know, I don't think people realize the long-term process that it takes to develop pharmaceuticals and then get them to market. You know, can you kind of share a little bit about that process of getting approval? And was it like it was for your products to be the same kind of thing for, you know, getting approval with, like, human, you know, pharmaceuticals?
Oh,
or is it
great
totally
question.
Different?
Well, it's a great question. So, you know, on the human side of drug development, it can take, you know, 10 plus years to develop a drug all the way from concept through approval of that drug. And only about 5% of drugs have success in going from concept to approval. I mean, the way we model new drugs often is, you know, let's say you're doing a drug to treat, developing a drug to treat cancer, and you take a mouse, you know, and you inject that mouse with some cancer cells. Well, that mouse doesn't actually have cancer. You know, it has a tumor of cancer cells, but not really the disease. So drug development on the human side is very difficult to do. The latest estimate from Tufts University is that it costs an average of $1.6 billion to develop a new chemical entity, a new drug from start to finish. So get ready. I hope you're sitting down. So for Kindred Bio, we can develop a drug for $3 to $5 million in 3 to 5 years. So the regulatory requirements are a little bit less. There are less studies required to develop drugs for cats, dogs, and horses, but we're doing it in such an efficient way. I think it's actually going to be an eye-opener for some of our colleagues on the human side to see what we've done on the animal health side. And, 3 to $5 million in 3 to 5 years. So very, very different than developing drugs for humans.
And, I mean, I find it fascinating because, you know, I mean, you hear so much on the media that it's like, oh, the drug companies are this or that and the other thing. And I'm like, you know, people, you know, and again, I get there's always two sides to every opinion. But when people understand the process of what it takes to even bring, you know, a product to market and that it's been approved, you know, it kind of, like, you know, stops you a little bit to go, oh, I kind of get it. You know, it's not that companies are just saying, okay, we're going to put this price on our drug. I mean, it's much different. But I love the space you're in. And I do know, I mean, for our listeners, again, you went and you and your co-founder, you guys went and raised capital. I mean, was this when you first kind of came together and you knew you were developing and researching and getting, you know, your products together, were you thinking that only raising funds was the way to go? And I'm really curious if you could share with our listeners, who are a lot of women owners, what was it like to go through raising capital? And for you as a woman owner specifically, I've got some real detailed questions, but was this, you know, kind of like a needle in a haystack, or did you really have a strategy around your raising funds process? What was that like for the benefit of our listeners as owners?
Oh, sure. Sure. Well, I'll tell you, you know, one of the things that we really had as an advantage is we had what we believed and has proved out to be a great idea. You know, we knew there was a real need for good drugs for pets. I mean, pets right now are typically treated with human drugs, either used off-label. You know, they're not always at the right dose or the right frequency. So we knew there was a need. We also knew that we were taking a lot of the technical risk off the table because these drugs had already been proven on the human side. You know, we joke about it because a lot of times, you know, safety work for human drug development is done in dogs, you know, so we really know how these drugs work. And so we say, you know, we won't test any drugs on our pets that haven't already been tested on humans first, you know. So again, these are drugs that we know work. And it's true.
That's pretty good.
So that was helpful. And, you know, the fact that we could develop these drugs for $3 to $5 million took some of the financial risk off the table because, you know, when you're in the human side of drug development, let's say you have, you know, $200 million in the bank, which, you know, is a hearty amount of money, but you've got to go do your next, you know, phase two or phase three study. You may need $400 million and you have to go out and raise money. So to be able to do entire programs for $3 to $5 million mitigates a lot of that risk. So we initially talked to, you know, known investors in the biotech space, friends, family, and we raised about $1 million when we first started the company. Things were going along quite well. We got our pipeline going, and then we went out. This was actually a wonderful problem to have. We went out and we were planning to raise about another $2 million. And what happened was there were some institutional investors who wanted to come in and they had minimums of $3 million. So we ended up raising $11 million and we were very happy. We had $12 million in the bank. We were building our team. We had started our pipeline. And then in the animal health space, there were a couple of triggers. Pfizer spun out its animal health company, which was a huge, billion-dollar IPO. And then a smaller biotech company in the animal health space went public. So our board and some of our investors came to us and said, you know, I really think you need to think about taking this company public, which, you know, was not in the stars for us in the beginning. Certainly when we started the company, we had no intention of going public. So we incorporated in September of 2012, and in December of 2013, we were doing an IPO roadshow and going public, which was incredible.
That is incredible. And a question on that, and like, Denise, did you know that Pfizer and these other companies were coming out with those products? I mean, had you had rumblings and knew this, or was it a surprise to you that here they were coming out with products for pets?
Well, we knew there were companies in this space, and, you know, some of the bigger companies, a lot of the larger companies like Eli Lilly and Merck, companies like that, Novartis, have animal health arms of their company. And there's been some roll-up.
Okay.
Eli Lilly bought Novartis, so there's been some changes. But regardless, some of the big pharma that we all know, they had some animal health, and we knew there were some smaller biotechs. What we didn't anticipate was some of these companies going public. You know, we didn't see that quite happening. But I think, you know, it's such an attractive investment opportunity to many people because, as I mentioned earlier, it's largely a cash pay business. You know, owners typically pay cash for these drugs, so there's not reimbursement hurdles. So the investment community found it very attractive. And I'm very happy.
You said it was Visa, MasterCard, and American Express. I'm just testing you on what you said. It's not cash.
Yes,
it's totally
so, you're right,
Visa,
Michelle.
MasterCard,
yes,
American Express.
My Amex statement will tell you that very thing. You are absolutely right.
That's right. Oh, how
That's
cute.
Great.
Well, you know, I want to go to one place, Denise, and I know it's like, you know, we have limited time, so I'm going to interrupt.
Sure.
I'm Susie Disruption. But, you know, as a woman executive, and especially as a leader, do you – you know, this is something that's always kind of like interesting to me because I came from banking. So know that it's like I was in the finance area for a lot of years. And it's always interesting to me when I hear women who will talk about going and trying to raise capital and the different experience that they have as a female than somebody who is maybe a male counterpart or for you with your co-founder. Did you find that there was any, I mean, were you primarily the pitch person and the spokesperson? I mean, you're wonderfully verbal. And, you know, in your experience, do you think there's kind of a different set of expectations or standards or process for women that are trying to go pitch to investors than men? I'm kind of curious, and I'm going to that. I'm going there, right? Is there a difference for women versus men from your experience?
Well, I'm so glad you asked this because I have to tell you, you know, I have been very fortunate in my 25-year pharmaceutical career that I haven't hit too many glass ceilings in biotech to speak of. And it was a real eye-opener for me to go to Wall Street. So Richard and I did the IPO roadshow together. And for those of you who don't know, you know, you typically do somewhere between 7 to 10 meetings a day for about 7 to 10 days. And you kind of gauge whether you can, you know, as you know, Michelle, fill a book, you know, and actually go public if you have enough people interested in your stock. So on the very first day, it was shocking to me because I would start to talk often and a gentleman across the table from me would say, well, that's great to see. So Richard, tell me about your company. Tell me about what you, you know, and it was shocking to me because, you know, and you know, I'm a 50-year-old woman. I was, you know, 45 at the time. I hadn't really experienced that level of, you know, sort of misogyny, if you will. And so what I realized very quickly was that was not the time and place, certainly, to make a stand because we wanted to go public and we wanted to raise money. And if those investors wanted to talk to Richard, that was fine. I think it was a little jarring for Richard as my partner as well to see that.
Did he notice as well? Do you think he noticed as well?
I think on the first day he didn't really notice, you know, with all the excitement. Uh-huh. But we did talk about it at the end of the day. And the next day he was so gracious and he said, no, let Denise finish her sentence. You know, and I said, well, don't do that. You know, again, we want their money. So if they want to talk to you, that's fine. But I think, you know, you raise a good point because I think a lot of times men don't even notice it because it's, you know, in certain sectors, it's just the world we're in. And I've heard the term in a couple different places of accidental misogynist, you know, it's just the norm and nobody notices it until it's pointed out. And once it's pointed out, it's pretty offensive, even to many men once they're attuned to it. And oftentimes I think you see it happen, you know, when men have daughters, you know, and they start to think about their daughter as they, and So I try to keep that in mind, that it's not always intentional. It's sometimes just a factor of, you know, the social norms that some of these men were raised in.
I can't thank you enough for just saying that, Denise, because, you know, kudos to you that, you know, what could have happened, right? The scenario might be that, you know, in the same situation, someone that didn't realize, you know, keep the prize, you know, the prize in mind of what you wanted, which was the funding.
Yes.
And I've seen women, you know, that get a little prickly about the idea that's like, okay, talk to me, you know, that you're right. That's not the time or the place, but, you know, most definitely. And then, you know, there's Richard saying, well, let Denise talk. And you're like, no, don't go there with it. I think, boy, smart on your part to recognize that. But, you know, that is something that I just go, gosh, that just ticks me off. And yet I, you know, interviewed men for a few years and I found so many of them exactly that. They don't even know that they're exhibiting that. And, you know, and the question becomes, then how do we as women kind of point that out? Or the bigger question, should we point that out, right? I mean, in that scenario, again, would you do anything differently to go through that again? Or you would just, you know, you were keeping your eye on the, you know, the end of the lane there of getting the funding. Could you, or should you have done anything different in your opinion?
Well, I think it's important for women to always remember what the end goal is in any situation and make that the priority. And I think that's a lesson for everyone. You know, you have to try to make it not about you, as hard as that is. And let me tell you, there were moments where I was just, you know, shocked. And I'd go back to my hotel room at night and I would kind of perseverate on what happened for the day. And, you know, it made me even more excited about going to meet with some of these investors one-on-one, you know, because that's obviously what's happened since we've been public. You know, Richard and I are all over the country meeting with various investors. And, you know, I thought, well, I'm going to get back in the room and you're going to have to talk with me because I'm the expert on the company and I'm the one coming to you with information and we're going to have to sit across from one another. And that's worked out really well. And I, you know, I'm always prepared. You know, I think as women, there are certain scenarios where you have to be over-prepared. You have to be the smartest person in the room. So I always make sure to go into any situation prepared. And I think one of the advantages we have, and this is a generalization, so take it for, you know, what it's worth. But I think as women, you know, I do my homework. You know, when I go in to meet with an investor, I know their background. I know the funds they invest in. I know what their investment style is. So I go in as well-versed as I can on the person. I think we have that softer side as well where we pick up on the social and the people skills, you know, as much as the business at hand.
I love that. Well, and if we can do it in the female way, you know, and again, I know there's all kinds of school of thought on it, but one of the things I love most, and Denise, thank you for that, because I want to kind of go to some of the other, you know, challenges, if you will, you know, from my mind that I think it's adversity that makes us great, you know, going through some of the challenges. And I know today, you know, our theme was like, don't let roadblocks become stop signs, you know, and I know you persevered on a number of ways. And can you kind of share some of the other maybe roadblocks that you had? Because I know that was one and I went to the man and the woman thing, but what are some of the other challenges that you had in raising money and being on Wall Street and getting them to back you with the IPO?
Well, you know, I will say, I think as IPOs go, we did have a relatively easy go only because we had such a good business plan, you know, but a lot of the challenge was really being able to articulate your business plan well. I mean, I remember one scenario in particular. I walked into the meeting and the gentleman shook my hand and he said, I just want you to know, I was raised on a farm. We didn't name our animals. We ate our animals. I don't care about puppies. I don't care about kittens. You know, you're not going to win me over.
Wow.
Which, of course, then made that me think, oh, I am going to win you over. I am going to win you over.
So you said, I'm going to persevere. That's funny.
I'm going to persevere. And I had to quickly, like, reshot. Because, you know, a lot of it is the heartstring around cats, dogs, horses. Let's bring them the same level of care. I immediately had to flip a switch and think, okay, my whole spiel that I usually do, I've got to flip this now. So it's really got to be hardcore business presentation, the business opportunity, the financial opportunity on the backs, if you will, of cats, dogs, and horses, rather than talking about the heartstrings piece of it. So being able, I think, to pivot, you know, in situations like that is really important. And, you know, investors, I mean, they come in with all sorts of preconceived notions. And I think your job is to be able to, on the spot, assess what intrigues them, what they're looking for, and, you know, filling in any blanks for them so they walk out of there feeling like they know your story and hopefully want to invest in your company.
Well, and of course, I got two questions. So number one, you did turn him around, yes? So we're good there.
I did. I was very
Yay!
Proud. Yes.
Okay, very good. Very good. My second question is, you know, because for a lot of women, I think, you know, we do. It's like you get on kind of this lane, this road, and I, especially for investor funding, great example. But how, I mean, are there some techniques or are there any little toolkit type, you know, slices of advice you might share with me and some of our listeners as to what can a woman do? Where did you learn to pivot like that? Is it just innate in you, or did you kind of have a couple of techniques that you used to think fast like that?
You know, this is going to sound funny, but I'm sure a lot of our listeners can relate. You know, a lot of the skills that I gained came from about a decade of waiting tables. You know, if you believe that. I mean, I would wait on tables and you'd have the curmudgeon and you'd have the arrogant person and you'd have, you know, the entire social, spectrum of people. And it really taught me a lot that one, that people are just people. And I will tell you that came from waitressing too, is when I get in a room and let me tell you, Michelle, we were in, you know, beautiful boardrooms looking over Central Park with, you know, millions of dollars of art on the wall. I mean, it's intimidating and it's you feel like you're in a movie. You feel like you're in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to just realize that person sitting across from you is somebody's son or daughter or brother, or, you know, that's their annoying brother or annoying sister, or, you know, they're not the cool dad at home. They're just people. And so I really really think that all the time. You know, people have to put their pants on one leg at a time. And if you really bring it back to thinking that, you know, this kid grew up with braces and, you know, picked on his little sister, and he's no better than I am just because he's, you know, sitting up in a boardroom in Wall Street. And that's really helped me to connect to people on a personal level, and then also be able to gauge, you know, sometimes people are absolutely all business and they don't want to know you. They don't want to know anything about you. They don't want you to know anything about them. And that's fine too. But being able to size that up at the beginning of a meeting as best you can, and pay attention to the social cues, pay attention to their reaction, their posture, you know, and then hopefully be able to pivot from there.
That's really good advice. And I, you know, in today's, you know, that next generation coming in, Denise, it does leave me a little scratching my head, you know, with just the communication styles of some of the millennial folks.
Yes.
And some of the younger up and rising stars that are coming. Is just the social skills are a little lacking there. So I do think, because we're all in the people business, I don't care what we're in. So great advice on that one. We've only got a couple minutes left, and I know I was looking at one other little statistic about you and Kindred Bio, and that is your team is over 60% women. Is that right? And
that is
I'm fascinated by that. I think that's awesome. And was, I think, in biotech that you might be kind of like, you know, upside down in most companies. Am I right in biotech and pharmaceutical of having that many women as part of your organization? Or what are your thoughts on that? Because kudos to you on that one. I love that you've got that many women in your company. We need more women in STEM, right?
We do need a lot of women in STEM. I mean, that's the thing. I think, you know, the more women we can promote in STEM, the better. And I'm in a really unique space right now that I am thriving in it, because the majority of veterinarians right now coming out of vet school are women. There have actually been some classes of veterinary schools where 100%, 100% of the students in certain classes have been women. The owners of pets who make the decisions are typically women. You know, as a pet owner, it's usually the mother in the household who's buying the food, taking the animal to the vet. So I'm actually in a very female-dominated arena. So some of that happened, you know, just by the sector that I'm in. But, you know, we have tremendous women and men in the company. And one of the things I'm really proud of is we have such a strong environment in the company of women who promote women, you know, women who support women. And we really try to make that cultural. I mean, we try to all support each other regardless of gender. But there is a special place where there's a lot of women mentors. We're, you know, a relatively small company, but in speaking of that, we have so many great mentors and such a great open network of women learning from women, and we really want to promote that.
And I'm curious for you, as a just, you know, final couple of questions, is this something you purposely sought out? I mean, what did women ask for that in your company, or did you just say, oh gosh, we want to bring this culture where we really support the advancement of women to the company? I mean, was it, you know, by accident that it kind of happened? Or I'm curious, because I mean, you are like a great example of what a company should do, you know, to be able to help. I mean, all employees, of course, for professional enrichment, but specifically women in a biotech firm like that. Was it something you set out to do, or did it just kind of naturally happen?
It did happen a bit organically. I think, you know, I'd like to think some of it was because of my leadership style and, you know, and not, as you said, not just for women, but, you know, one of the things, and I'll never forget this as long as I live. It was actually Richard 14 years ago when we were at Elan, who said to me, you know, I love that you are a strong enough leader that you're fine with hiring people who are smarter than you are. So after I got by initially being insulted by that, I stepped back and I said, you know, you're right.
No, it's a great compliment.
Because I tell our leaders, the more you bring up your team members, the better leader you are and the better your team does.
Yeah.
So we really truly do have that culture throughout the organization. But it's really wonderful that some of our junior women have all of these talented, successful women, I think, to look up to and to learn from. And they're happy to mentor in return.
I think that's great. Do you do anything formal? I mean, for our listeners that are out there that they work for companies, I mean, is it that you do any sort of, you know, like employee resource groups or any affinity groups with the women within your organization? Anything different than other employees, or just it just kind of naturally happens? Do you do anything specific to help advance women in your company that work for you?
Sure. I mean, it is pretty organic, you know, again, that they work together. But, you know, we do pass on a lot of information among us as women, you know, whether it's books or newsletters or, you know, Connected Women of Influence or, you know, opportunity, you know. And I as soon as I met you and your group, I mean, I shared it immediately with the rest of my team, you know, as a resource. So I'm so grateful that there are – no, I really am. I'm grateful that there are groups out there like Connected Women of Influence, because it really gives women, and particularly junior women, you know, it teaches them what to expect and what to accept, you know, as the norm. And I think it's wonderful. And so we do a lot of sharing, you know, of resources, of support information as a company.
And you said, I think, is it anything formal on the mentoring side or kind of advocate side, or does it just people give advice and kind of share resources and support one another? Any like formal mentoring programs that go on with Kindred Bio among your female staff?
Yeah. Well, we're a relatively small company, but we do have a couple women in particular who are phenomenal mentors. And so I do direct a lot of the junior people toward those particular women. And so they know they always have an open door. We don't at this point have any formal groups, but I think as we grow, we certainly will, and particularly around STEM, as you said, you know, it's so wonderful to provide women opportunity in STEM. And we do encourage continuing education and all sorts of opportunities around STEM.
Girl, you are amazing. I want to congratulate you again on the Women of Influence Awards. I know one of many, I'm sure, but we were delighted to be recognizing you for that, for our Women of Influence Awards. And, you know, we are trying to make a nice path and pave a great way for Women's History Month. So you are on your way for that, and just great information. And I want to say thank you for being our leading lady, Denise. To our listeners out there,
me.
You know we're here. Oh, you're so welcome, and thank you. To our listeners, we're here every Friday at 2 p.m. and Mondays at 9 a.m. And I am delighted to say that our next leading lady, we will be here Monday morning, and our topic is, you know, an interesting one. It's going to be on health disparities, diversity and inclusion, controversies, context, and solutions. And we are going to be interviewing, I hope I'm saying this right, Dr. Patty Rose, and she is the president of the Yale Black Alumni Association. And our host on Monday is Cecile Berrial, and she is our host of Serving Up Diversity. So I know that will be an enlightening show. To all of our listeners, we thank you for your loyalty. And as I always like to say, please, please, please be supportive of other women and help the next one in line. Have a great weekend.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business, executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.